This episode of Core Confidence Life has been sponsored by whoareyouandwhy.net.
Disconnect from the old and start anew. Drop your baggage and learn the true importance of honesty and character. Who Are You and Why? The Evolution of You by Brian Penso will reintroduce you to yourself. From a no bull, straight shooter perspective, Brian gives you the manual to let you know why you are where you are in life and how to kick it up to that next level. This book is the true epitome of giving you higher consciousness with lower stress and sharper skills to deal with the everyday ups and downs of life. To find out more information about this fantastic book, just go to whoareyouandwhy.net. That's whoareyouandwhy.net.
Core Confidence Life.
All right, welcome to the program. I am your host, Dennis R. Sumlin, coming at you from New York City. This is the Core Confidence Life Personal Development Podcast. And yes, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Core Confidence Life, and of course, Facebook at Core Confidence Life. And of course, if you want to hear past shows, definitely go to cclpodcast.com. Go there if you want to be a guest or listen to past shows or whatever. That's right. So on today's program, we have a personal story interview here. We are talking to George Kaler, and he has a book called Surviving Georgie. And this is one man's story about his preteen life back in the mid-20th century. That's right. So, and this book is actually not just a story of a man's life here, which we sometimes have on the program, but it also goes to show you the history, what was going on at that time. And so this book is chock full of good stories and, dare I say, family-friendly stories. And just little tidbits in this book will definitely inform you, as well as the whole book in and of itself. Like, I didn't know that women didn't wear underwear back then. You know, they would wear the long dresses, but they didn't wear underwear. I didn't know that. All right, so we're going to get to George Kaler and his book about his adolescent childhood, growing up on the farm and everything. And this will serve as history, education, entertainment, and everything in between. That's right, here on Core Confidence Life. That's right. Now let's get to it. Hey, George, how you doing?
Thanks for having me on, Dennis. I appreciate this.
Definitely, definitely. So you've got a book out, Surviving Georgie, and it's all about your life. Now, the title suggests that it could be one heck of a book there, because Surviving Georgie. How difficult could that possibly be, right?
Well, so, it's more than just about my surviving my childhood. There's several incidents in the book where I almost die, usually through stupidity. And there's about 12 incidents in the book where I almost killed my dad, all by accident. And the people of my time, they had to survive my childhood. And so sort of they survived me and I survived life. And here I am, 76, and still here.
All right. So tell us about this book. You know, where does it take place? You know, what's the gist of this book here? Where does it take place? What's the setting? Everything like that.
It takes place in what I believe to be America's age of innocence, 1949 through 1956. I mean, we really, America was doing well. We were through with the war. A whole lot of babies had been born after the war, and I was born during the war. And but it's about a small farming community. We were what was called Pennsylvania Dutch, but we weren't Amish. Amish, they were impractical as far as we were concerned. But we had electricity. We used a tractor, and we went around in a car and so on. And the Amish still live the way they did when I was a kid. Nothing has changed much. But we we lived pretty primitively compared to now. For instance, we didn't have a television set while I was growing up until we had one for about a year. I really appreciated it. Then it blew a tube. We didn't have any money to buy a new tube, so we didn't have television again after that. But it takes place outside Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. You ever hear of Punxsutawney?
You know, I have heard of Punxsutawney because of the whole groundhog thing. They have Punxsutawney Phil or something like that. So I hear about it every year when on Groundhog Day. It's Punxsutawney Phil or whatever it is.
That's where I was raised. And for us, Phil wasn't just a cute little animal. He was dinner. We shot them and ate them.
Yum. Groundhog. Does that mean you keep repeating yourself?
Actually, groundhog is really good. It's groundhogs are totally vegetarian. They're a very clean animal. And chickens, people eat chickens, they eat anything. Whereas groundhogs are pretty clean. You don't want an old one. They're tough and stringy. But anyway, outside Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And the stories take place mainly at home. My mother, father, six siblings, the dinner scene, the farming scenes in the barn, in the hayfield, skating on the pond, and when I fell through and almost drowned. And then also takes place in the one-room school. People think of the one-room school as maybe a bad education, but actually we had the highest inflation-adjusted SAT scores in America's history. I think it's because in the one-room school, you heard the lessons from first grade to eighth grade. So when you were in the eighth grade, you've already heard the lessons, and you're way ahead of the curve and way ahead of the eighth grade. And the teaching was intense and personal. And the one-room school was funny and so politically incorrect compared to education today.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of people, when they write a book, they sometimes write a variation, things that may not always be true and the people may not always be real. So for your book, are all the people real and are all stories true?
Every word is true and every person is real. I changed a couple of names to protect the people that are still living. And also, a lot of the people are still mad as hell at me for experimenting with them as I experimented with the universe to see what works and what doesn't work. And I may need police protection next time I go back to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Oh my goodness.
It's as real as can be. I've done book signings in Amish stores, selling well in Amish stores especially. In fact, the bishop, the Amish head bishop said, it's the perfect family book. Well, the problem is Amish sales aren't publicized much, so nobody knows that it's a big seller. But the Amish love it. And when I go up there, a lot of people come to the book signings to buy a book, perhaps to see if they're in the book. And a lot of them are. And they recognize themselves. And this one girl, my last book signing in Pennsylvania, she said, this story here, is that about my uncle? And I said, yes, it is. She said, we always heard that about him. We're finding out it's true. And I said, yeah, it's all true.
You know, I've thought about writing a book or something or something about my life. And I'm thinking about, you know, the people who are still alive, who I don't have positive things to say about them, you know, what could possibly happen? So did you come across that? Like, okay, I really don't have nice things to say about this person, but they're still alive. So, you know, were you concerned with ruining people's reputation, having people really, really be angry at you? Like, I think about stuff like that.
Well, I assure you, I didn't ruin anybody's reputation. There's a huge coal company up in the area. And I didn't mention it by name, but I did say how when they were mining coal, strip mining, how they took out a family cemetery up there. And just the bodies, caskets, tombstones, they're all at the bottom of a coal pit somewhere, maybe 100 feet under a bunch of ground and what we call a spoil pile on top of that. And it's about the only time I really expressed anger towards something in the book, is the desecration of a family cemetery, all for maybe $100 worth of coal that lay under the graves of those folks who died maybe 100 to 150 years ago. The book is actually, I wrote it to give people a laugh. I wrote it for people over 70 so they could reminisce and enjoy the good times. And a lot of my fan mail is from people over 70, and I got 3 in the last month from widows who said that their husbands were reading or being read to Surviving Georgie while they were in hospice. And in the very process of dying, they were laughing their butts off. Dennis, I've heard that laughter is the best medicine. Well, they died anyway, but few people actually die laughing. But they died laughing at the stories in my book. But a lot of the mail I'm getting is from kids, 10-year-old kids, 9-year-old kids. Grandpa Georgie, were things really like that? Why aren't they like that now? Who took it? And so I'm hoping that as kids read it, that they'll want to explore a world bigger than their device that they're always looking into, that there's really a grand universe out there to be explored and enjoyed.
All right. So you've gotten fan mail from across the age spectrum there. Very nice. And speaking of that, you at the top of the show, you mentioned that you were 76 years old. And in your book, you are talking about things that happened long ago, even before you were in school, in Skrill. So, you know, you have clear memories of these things. How does that happen? Because I remember things before I was 5, but I'm not yet 76. I hope to get there.
Actually, Dennis, you'll remember them when you're 76, and you'll probably remember them better than what you had for breakfast this morning. I don't know what it is about the human brain, but you remember events in your early childhood better than you remember what happened yesterday. Now, in my case, I remember what people said to me. I mean, word for word. I have a mind like that. I'm not sure why God gave me a mind like that, but he did. And I remember word for word. I remember how they looked when they were talking to me. Usually they looked scared as hell because they were wondering what I was going to do next. But people really are endowed with memories that can go back a very long ways. I don't know why it goes into that long-term memory and it's held so firmly there and so accurately. But even Alzheimer's patients, I got a fan letter last month from San Antonio, and he said, Georgie, my dad is 85. He has Alzheimer's. He hasn't spoken since he was 80. It's 5 years. But as I read him stories from Surviving Georgie, he was laughing loudly. He said, I think the book touched on memories that had not been destroyed by the Alzheimer's. And I was thinking, yes, that's usually the way it is, and why I wrote the book, so people could remember the good times of America. It was so much easier back then, especially compared to right now. Things are rough.
right at this moment. Oh, boy, talk about a magic moment here. Oh, well.
Yeah, I was supposed to meet you in person, but we had to do it by Zoom.
Zoom. There you go. Zoom. Yeah, you know, that thing was supposed to be in person, but nope. You know, speaking of reading stories and people laughing their asses off, what are some stories in there? Like, what are some of the funny stories in there that make people roll on the floor with LOLs?
I think the pure audacity of a little boy's imagination. For instance, my older brother, Mao, read me a story about the little goat boy of Holland. There was a story in the grade school reading book. And the little boy couldn't walk, but he had a little red wagon, and his goat pulled him around in the wagon. And I asked my dad for a goat, but he said, no, we're a dairy cow farm family, and there's not going to be a goat. And that was the end of that. When Daddy said no, that was truly the end. I didn't didn't need to bug him because he wasn't going to change his mind. So I was looking at our dog, Tommy, and I think Tommy's about the size of a small car. So I tied Tommy to my wagon, and I expected him to pull me just out of kindness or something, but he didn't. So that's where sticks come in handy. So I got a stick, and I sat back in the wagon and whacked him on the back, and he just lay on his side. It seems he didn't understand his new role in life. And it was sort of like he was looking at me saying, why? You know. So I let him loose. I thought, I need something bigger than Tommy. So I used to rope the cows. And just for the fun of it, not for keeping them or anything, but I went down to the barnyard, and there was a lot of baler twine down there, and I was able to finally, it took about 50 tries to rope a big heifer. And I tied the end of the twine to the wagon, and she had the rope around her neck, and she wasn't moving either. And so I picked up a rock and hit her in the rump with the rock, and she took off. Well, the slack in the rope was probably 20 feet long, but when that gave out, the wagon went off from under me. And I saw earth, sky, earth, sky, earth, sky. Finally, I was lying on the ground there. Just been introduced to Sir Isaac Newton's laws of inertia and momentum. And I was the inertia and the wagon was momentum. So anyway, the cow was dragging the wagon away and I was lying there in the dust and I saw chicken legs there beside me. I thought about my mother's box of 20 mule borax. There was a picture of 20 mules pulling a wagon. And it struck me, one mule couldn't pull a wagon, but 20 could. One chicken couldn't pull me, but a whole mess of them could. So Daddy used to take his naps in the afternoon, and that's when I experimented with life. And he was sleeping soundly, taking his nap. And that's kind of how he survived 14-hour hard work days on the farm, by taking a nap in the afternoon. But anyway, so it took me probably an hour to catch maybe a dozen chickens. I would make corn trails up to my foot. So the chicken would peck its way up the corn trail. And finally, when it got to my foot, I would grab it, tie the twine around its neck. And I tied all the twines as they came along to the gatepost. Well, after I had maybe 12 or 13 chickens, I tied all the twines to my wagon. And I thought, this is going to be a great ride. By the way, before I could do that, I had to fetch my wagon. The cow was dragging it all over the barnyard, and every time she moved, the wagon would move, and it would spook her. And finally, she settled down for a drink of water, and I was able to untie the wagon. Well, I tied all the chickens to my wagon, and I sat in the back of the wagon, and I had a branch, and I brought the branch down on the chickens. Well, they weren't even coordinated at all. I thought they would just run forward. Well, they ran to the left, they ran to the right, but nobody was moving forward. They were totally uncoordinated and disorganized. By that time, Daddy heard all those squawks and stuff, and he awakened from his nap, and he came running out on the porch, and he yells, "Georgie, chickens!" Well, anyway, he ran for the wagon, but it was kind of too late because the only knot I knew how to make when I was 5 was a slip knot. Those poor chickens, they were getting strangled to death. And I sat there in the wagon watching Daddy trying to get his big fingers between the chicken necks and the twines and letting them loose. Anyway, the conclusion of the whole thing, we had chicken for Sunday dinner, quite a bit of it. And Daddy really didn't look like he enjoyed it. Anyway, people generally like the story of outrageous experiments that went wrong. And that was one of them.
I see that chicken. Well, as only who didn't choke it.
Well, actually, I did, but not on purpose.
Nothing like choking. You choked the chicken by accident. Okay, how often does that happen?
When you make a slip knot and it's pulled on, the slip knot gets tighter and tighter. It automatically chokes the chicken.
Yeah, that automatically. Don't squeeze too tight, poor chicken.
We had on the Pennsylvania Dutch community, we had something called shunning. And shunning is when you've done something especially egregious. And you're not allowed to eat with the dinner until your penance has been paid. Well, I had to eat my dinner on the back porch an awful lot. One time, the longest was for 2 weeks. My brother and I, we were out in the field, and here a weather balloon had come down, and it had been released. These balloons were released back in the 1950s, and that's all the Weather Service. They would send them up, and this transmitter would say pretty much what was going on, humidity, all that kind of stuff. And then the balloon would break, which would automatically open a parachute, and the device would float to the ground. Well, it would be found by somebody sooner or later. We found one, and you took it to the post office. And the reward was you got to keep the parachute. Well, my brother said, you can keep the parachute. I thought, well, there must be something I can do with this. So I took a rock, maybe 2 pounds, and climbed up to the top of the barn, maybe 50 feet off the ground, and dropped the parachute. And the rock billowed very nicely to the ground. I did a couple of them. Fluffy the cat was rubbing my leg. It was the most unfortunate timing in any cat's life to do it at a time like that. And I said, Fluffy, you want to ride? Anyway, she just rubbed on my leg. I thought, well, she'll get a great ride on the parachute. So I went to the top of the barn again, tied the rope to the cat, dropped the parachute, and just as I dropped it, my dad came running out of the house. Georgie, no! It was too late. By the time the echo hit me, I dropped the rope. Well, she would have had a great ride, except she suddenly, I don't know why cats do this, but she suddenly wrapped herself up in the parachute. I mean, like in a millisecond, she rolled over and over and wrapped the whole parachute around her, dropped 50 feet, and all 9 lives left her when she hit the ground. No, there was no sound. She just hit the ground. Deader than a doornail, as we used to say. Well, Daddy, excuse me, I don't have a cough button here. Daddy was there on the porch, and the family came running out, and he yelled, Georgie just murdered Fluffy. Well, I had to eat my dinner on the back porch for 2 weeks, and once that got around the community, what I'd done to poor Fluffy with the parachute. My name was Mud for a long time. I didn't do it on purpose, but my whole life was doing horrible things like that.
Mm. You know, this book has gone pretty far because Saturday Night Live and Focus on the Family, which you would think were opposite forces in the world, they got a hold of this book and they both liked it. And so I'm wondering, are there any serious parts? Are there any parts that are deep and serious and something that'll be make you go, whoa?
There's several serious parts. One of them, one is the story of how our family celebrated Christmas. It's called the Kaler Christmas. It's probably the most serious, although it's light, it's still serious. It shows a family that truly enjoyed Christmas together in the way that Christmas was once enjoyed. And it's really great. It's a little bit like A Christmas Story where Ralphie wanted the BB gun, but it's more serious. And then there's another story of my best friend, Timmy. When I was 8 years old, he got bone cancer. And he was going to die, and Mother allowed me to go visit him. He was at home at people died at home back then. You didn't die at the hospital. And he was there, and he said, Georgie, I can see the angels when I close my eyes. I can hear them singing to me. It's so beautiful. I'm not afraid. And he died. And it really struck me. What did he see? And is he okay now? And I was thinking, I made a comment of my adult Georgie, that one day when I'm in heaven, I'll probably run into Timmy. But am I going to be eight? Is he going to be an adult? The problem is, I can't imagine me being anything other than 8 years old and him being 8 years old as well, so that we can resume the fabulous games we used to play together. It's just a lot of philosophy in the book. The head of the English department at a local university said that the book reminded him a whole lot of Catcher in the Rye, that I was Holden Caulfield, but without the depression and the neuroses and all that kind of stuff. He said Holden was actually really, really funny in this Catcher in the Rye, but there's a lot of introspection in the book where a little boy examines his own mind, his relationship with God, nature, people. And even when it's funny, there's a lot of philosophy in it.
Very, very philosophical, introspective, and things like that. That's pretty cool. Now, now the time period that this book takes place, is it only from that time period when you were just a little farm boy, or does it document you a little older? Like, you know, is it just restricted to those times back then?
I've been asked to write a book about my rock and roll touring days in the 60s. You know, one of the guys, I was there. And, but I don't know, I was an awful person when I was touring. And as most rock and rollers were back then, I think they're even worse now. But no, the book ends at 12. And I decided if it's going to be a book of the age of innocence, Georgie has to be innocent. So I stopped it at age 12 because then I became a teenager and became aware of my sexuality and all of that kind of stuff. So I was no longer thinking innocent thoughts after age 13. So it stops right there.
Yeah. After you woke up and went, whoa, what's that tree there? Then that was the end of your innocence. How did that get there?
Anyway, but I think that Saturday Night Live, the people there said, perhaps one of the funniest books ever. And I think it's because I wrote it to make people laugh. In fact, as I said earlier, people are laughing while they're dying, while they're reading that. But I also wrote it as a history book, a true history that I don't think has really been explored from a little boy's outlook, a little bit like House on the Prairie, but generally funny as I'll get out throughout. But I wanted people to see what that era was truly like in the eyes of a little boy who lived through it. I think that's why the people who focused on the family said that they loved it, because of the spiritual overtones. They said deeply spiritual, especially coming from the mind and heart of a little boy.
Hmm. So this book is about you as a little boy on the farm, but who is your target audience? I know you mentioned briefly a little bit that you intended it for people over 70 to reminisce and so forth, but who else is it for?
If you want to know the truth, right now it's for anybody, because you know it's selling well on the Amish stores, but that isn't going to get me to where I want to be. I was with the Disney people a while back, and they did a story on one of my people in Africa, Fiona Mutesi. The name of the movie they wrote did was The Queen of Katwe. It's about Fiona Mutesi, a girl that we rescued in the slums of Katwe outside Kampala. And so Disney did a movie on her, and it turned out to be a pretty good movie. It starred Lupita Nyong'o. I think she did a great job. And so I was talking to Disney about doing a movie on surviving Georgie. And they said, well, before we're going to risk $20 or $30 million on a film, your book has to reach critical mass in sales. I said, oh, well, how many would that be? And they said, oh, 500,000 would draw some interest. How close are you? I said, I'm only 470,000 short. So they said, you've got some work to do. So I'm going to sell books to a lot of people before Disney will do a movie on it. And so now it's just for anybody. But my fan letters have been from people old enough to write. And I think the oldest one I got was from a lady that's 101 who really appreciated it. Now, some of the stories in the book are reminiscent of the book goes forward and backward, where I reflect back as an adult. For instance, when I'm in a Uganda school, reflecting back on my one-room school, or reflecting back on my dad's childhood. There was a lady in our area that I knew, didn't know her until she was older, but Daddy knew her when she was the toughest, strongest woman in the county. And she was probably stronger than any man. And she was really tough. Her name was Belle Hartley. And Belle, she would go out into the fields with the men to make sure she got a good day's work. And the men were pretty much afraid of her. She was really a very large, buxom woman, heavy set, strong as an ox. And one day, Daddy was waiting at the barn for Grandpa and the other workmen to come in. And Belle was riding the lead bell jumper, coming back to the barn. And when she slipped off the horse, back then women wore ankle-length dresses. Went all the way down to their ankles, which is the way it was. But they didn't wear underwear. You didn't need to. And so when she slipped down, the bottom of her dress got caught in the tackle of the horse. So she came down, the dress came up. And she was totally, when she hit the ground, she was totally exposed. So she turned her front towards the horse to preserve a little bit of dignity, I guess. And one of the workmen ran over, took off his big straw hat, and tried to cover her very ample butt with the hat. And another workman yelled out, "More hat!" But anyway, he did. That workman didn't get a beating. I guess she was too embarrassed about the whole thing and appreciated him trying. But Belle one day was out in the fields by herself. Back then, there were 1,000 ways you could die a horrible death. And we were just, seemed I was going to a funeral up or down the valley every few months. Somebody was always getting killed because everything was so dangerous. The machinery, the horses, the bulls, especially the bulls. I had 2 second cousins that were both killed by bulls. And I was always killed by a bull. But Belle Hartley was out, and she was riding what was called a McCormick Reaper. Well, here's the thing. When the horses pulled it, the wheels would turn, and those wheels were the engine, so to speak, that would turn the cutter blades. And it was like a very large clipper. These blades would go back and forth and cut the grain. Well, the horses were pulling it, and all of a sudden, the mower and reaper got caught up in something or other. Belle got off the seat, and she was freeing the matter from the cutter bar, and the horses got spooked, maybe from a snake or something, and they took off. Well, when the wheels turned, the blades went back and forth, and Belle looked down, and her foot was on the ground, separated from her. Now, at a time like that, a lot of people would panic, seeing your foot on the ground with you not attached to it. Well, Belle took off her bandana and tied it around her leg to make a very tight tourniquet. And she picked her foot up, and she rode the reaper back to the farmhouse, got into her Model T Ford, and drove into the hospital with the foot in a bucket. Well, Dennis, that was probably 50 years or so before any kind of microsurgery, and they couldn't reattach the foot. But nothing goes to waste in our community, so Belle put the foot in a huge jar of formaldehyde, big pickle jar, and she put it on her mantle above the fireplace. So whenever you went to visit Belle, there was her foot up on the mantle. Mm. And it was quite a conversation piece, but the thing is when you were talking to Mel, your eyes kept shifting to the foot there on the mantle. You were afraid to say, "Hey, Mel, could you move your foot?" Because she might put it on the coffee table right in front of you. So there were a lot of characters like that in the book who did the strangest things, but putting your foot in a jar of formaldehyde and displaying it to everybody.
You really stuck your foot in it this time, didn't you?
Yeah, the formaldehyde. Anyway, she was reunited with her foot about 40 years later when she died, and the foot was buried with her.
Mm.
Wow. That is that
I know,
is,
that's a weird story, isn't it?
Yeah, that definitely is something else to that's something that, you know, when you were talking, of course, leave it to me for this particular part of what you said to pop up. I did not know that women who wore those long dresses all the way down to the ground didn't have any underwear on. And I'm wondering, well, why not? Like, just because you have a long dress on, why don't you wear an underwear? Like, what is this no underwear thing under your dress?
They just didn't. And my wife was reading that story, and she said, you know, that's the strangest thing. Grandma said that she didn't wear underwear under their long dresses. I mean, why wear it? Everything's covered anyway, and it just add more heat. So, no, they didn't wear underwear. Just long dresses.
That is interesting.
Unfortunately, Belle didn't have it on, and she was completely exposed that day. By the way, that was my first naked woman that I ever saw. I saw one later at the carnival, and they looked both about the same.
Well, I suppose
to see the one at the carnival
from a distance, maybe. Yeah, I suppose.
No, those carnival strippers back then, they wouldn't have made the centerfold of anything except maybe wrestling world.
So this book here, do you plan? Now, I know you mentioned briefly that people want you to write another book about your tours, about stuff like that. But do you actually plan to write any more books about your life?
If this one does okay, yes. But I'm a wealth manager, and you know when to cut your losses. And you never fall in love with a certain stock, especially if it's the company you once worked for. It's just bad financial planning to do it that way. So I have a lot of my life is invested in this book, and I'm really hoping that it does well. But if it doesn't, there's not going to be a follow-up book, because I know as a wealth manager when to cut my losses. And I'll tell you, if you want to know what a money pit is, write a book. If you want to know what humility is, write a book.
Absolutely. So, you know, you are a wealth manager in your non-book life there. So what made you? Now, I know you say what the book is meant to do, you know, history, laughter, all these things. But what was the driving force for you to even sit down and write this book?
I wrote it, as I said, as a history book. You know, we live in, Dennis, you're so young compared to me. I wrote it as a history book so that people would truly understand the way things were. And I wrote it not just to be hilariously funny, which has been called maybe the funniest book in print by Victoria Jackson of Saturday Night Live. By the way, I thought she was funny, and that's back when Saturday Night Live was really funny. But I wrote it so that people would understand the way things were, and maybe could be again if we got back to the family unit, if our government got back to the Constitution. Yeah, our founders gave us a guidebook for the way we're to conduct our affairs. And I don't know why we're not looking at a guidebook. You know, when I'm down in Africa, we go somewhere, we have a map. If we don't have the map, we end up in the wrong place. We die. And so our Constitution is sort of the same way. And if we don't follow it, our country's going to die. It's so unique. And at any rate, I do a radio spot on that as well every day. It's called Tea with George. Check it out sometime. And I have guest hosts and so on it. But it's only 1 minute long. I think it's on 1,138 stations, mainly out west in Canada and so on. But it's on preserving what we got, the good things in life that we got, and how to do that. And the book is really an era of maybe the best of what America ever had.
All right. So you mentioned some of your work there, checking out Tea with George, and then we've been talking about the book. So I think it would be a good thing to tell people, how can you get this book? Where is this book? How do you get your claws on it?
Well, go to an Amish bookstore if you're not near one. it's in several other bookstores, but not enough to name them all. There are too many to name them all right now, but not enough to just say go to the bookstore. It's on Amazon, of course, Surviving Georgie. And also on my website, survivinggeorgie.com. And there's a movie trailer on there, too. The movie trailers of the little boy who tied all the chickens to his wagon. And people who have seen the movie trailer literally die laughing as they're watching it. They're just, tears are coming down their cheeks as they watch this little boy tie the chickens to his wagon, trying to make them pull his wagon. And that's politically correct, incorrect as well. ASPCA, they would really be unhappy about Georgie the way he was. Also, it's on Amazon. I'm saying go to Amazon. I think the best deal is the PDF version that you can put on your Kindle or whatever. I like to read in bed at night without disturbing my wife. Well, the easiest way to do that is just reading it on my Kindle. And so you can get it on Amazon. And by the way, it's about $10 cheaper. And I think the book is $14.99 for an autographed book, $10 for the Kindle book. And with the Kindle book, you don't have to pay shipping or anything. And you don't have a book taking up space. I don't know why. It's like Seinfeld asked, why do people buy books? You know, read the book and that's it. You know, so unless you want an autographed book, there's no reason to buy the physical book. I'd buy the Kindle.
Okay. So it's on Amazon and it's on your website as well.
SurvivingGeorgie.com.
SurvivingGeorgie.com. And of course, that will be linked on the episode page if you're on the main website listening to this and so forth. All right. Well, thank you for coming on the program and talking to us about this book. Thanks for not being a chicken and coming on and talking about it.
Nice. Chickens stay away from me now.
Oh. Well, I love chicken.
There's a lot of chicken stories in the book, by the way, and I hope your listeners will check it out. It's really, as we used to say, it's a real hoot.
So, yes, it's a real hoot. I know people who still, she's a real hoot. Yeah. It's a real hoot.
People say, I have a number of fan letters that said, I started reading it when I went to bed, and I didn't put it down until the next morning, and I had to go to work the day without any sleep at all. So it's a book that's going to be hard to put down, and it's an easy read. Kids can read it. There's nothing unfamily in there. Adults like it too, but especially older adults really love the book because they're going to reminisce and they're going to relive their lives, their childhoods, and the joy they had in my stories.
I like that term. There's nothing unfamily in there. There's nothing. Well, none of my books would be appropriate. All of my books are all unfamily.
Well, so, you and I, we go to a different audience. I appreciate what you do too. you're great at what you do. And a little bit like music. You know, I played Motown, but I also appreciated, the Eric Clapton and everything they do. One thing I don't like is rap, but old Motown people don't like rap.
Oh, let's see. A cat in the hat sat on a fat rat. Okay, now do you hate me?
Anyway, thank you so much for having me on.
If you'd like to be a guest on the Core Confidence Life podcast, just fill out our application by going to coreconfidencelife.com/guest. That's coreconfidencelife.com/guest. We appreciate you and all your feedback. So to give us comments about the podcast or anything else, just send a message to Dennis@coreconfidencelife.com. That's Dennis@coreconfidencelife.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and all the social media outlets, of course, at Core Confidence Life. I'm your host, Dennis, from New York City, giving you higher consciousness, lower stress, hard-hitting manhood issues with just a side of cornball humor.